This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is The Morning Run with Xiao Ning and Chuang. In about half an hour, we'll be speaking to Kun Goh, Head of Asia Research at ANZ Bank, for his take on Malaysia's second quarter GDP, which came out last Friday. But in the meantime, we'll be focusing on digital disruption trends. Because one sector, or you know, one part of the industry which has been really in the forefront of technological change has been the telecommunication companies. Now, the pace has accelerated as we move to 5G networks, increasing the use with the increasing use of digitalization, artificial intelligence, and of course, the Internet of Things. But at the same time, the pressure to transform and meet the changing needs of both retail and enterprise customers continues, even as margins compress and competition intensifies.
So meanwhile, the divide between industries is breaking down. The chase to not only protect revenue, but also increase the share of wallet has grown even more heated. And of course, we know that recently, GE Insurance Singapore bought a 22% stake in Axiata's fintech unit, Boost, for $70 million. And of course, similarly, U-Mobile has also started a comprehensive fintech ecosystem with digital financial services.
So today we take a deeper dive into this ecosystem disruption and the thinking behind such a move. So we speak to we're speaking to Jasmine Lee, Chief Marketing Officer of U-Mobile. Thank you for joining us this morning, Jasmine. Now, why are telco companies shifting beyond providing voice and data services? I mean, is this inevitable due to the compression of average revenue per users or ARPU, and what I think has clearly been the flat revenue growth of the industry?
I think this voice, data, SMS is all becoming a parity. We are providing just a trunk for connectivity. So beyond that, we really need to look for new source of revenue and related to connectivity. So one day, what I envision is all these things should be free, just like air and water. It should be free to the people. So what we are trying to find is a sweet spot where we cross over to other industries and start making the money in that layer. So service as a revenue, service as a service instead of connectivity.
So Jasmine, is that why you've launched GoPay and GoBiz, which is related to financial services? Because it's already a crowded space. So how do you plan to differentiate your mobile offerings from the competition?
So when we were looking at this space, yes, you're right, it is crowded. But it's crowded in a very small area only, which is the retail and F&B purchase and lifestyle purchases. So these are the area where all the e-wallets are fighting with. So where we have positioned ourselves is a universal e-wallet that allows consumers to buy digital services, digital financial services at an affordable, accessible rate. So let me give you an example, insurance. I think 70% of Malaysians are uninsured. Or if you look at the numbers, it's 50%, they say. But a lot of it is duplicated. So yeah, that means a person has multiple insurance. So I would say 70% is uninsured. And I think almost all of the B40, only 4% are insured. So it is a problem of accessibility. So life insurance, for example, the average ticket size is around 1,000 ringgit a year. So we are creating products that are 10 ringgit per month. That is very easy for people to understand because that's how they top up. They are prepaid with 10 ringgit notes. So we create products that are 10 ringgit to make it easy, that is available on a single currency note. So we create wealth products that are 100 ringgit a month, which is unheard of because previously the wealth products average ticket size is 23,000. So this is what we are creating, a differentiation in creating an e-wallet, accessible and affordable financial services.
So what kind of returns does U-Mobile expect from such a venture? How soon can you see these positive returns? Or are you pursuing a very investment-like model with partnerships then?
Yes, correct. So currently we do a very investment light kind of operation. So it's all based on OPEX. Even the platform, which is a Bank Negara standard PCCI DSS platform, is a managed service with a partner. So all the financial products are working with the experts in the different fields, but we create products together to target the underserved. So all these are very partnership-driven, all OPEX-driven. So very different from a telco operations where it's very CAPEX-heavy. So we hope within the 3 to 5 years, it will be profitable. I think it is showing a momentum going there. So we hope one day the dream that I have that it will allow us to offer connectivity for free to cover the connectivity cost, that will be great.
So Jasmine, is the end game a digital bank?
I'm not sure about the digital bank yet. I think we would like to be in that space, but a lot of the services that we offer today, because we have both the acquiring and issuing license, so we are also an acquirer. So we represent Visa, Master and UnionPay, and we go out and acquire merchants. So a lot of things that we do today is already digital. So we are asking ourselves, do we really need a digital bank license? And what does it do differently? So even in traditional banks, they are already doing a lot of transaction online. They have the app and they have the online banking portion, and they're beginning to shut down a lot of their physical branches. So unless we see a real differentiation in the digital bank in terms of products and services, let's say Bank Negara allows us to turn around products really fast and create a lot of sandboxing to try out different type of financial products, then yes, then the digital bank makes sense. It has to operate in the digital way and not the traditional way of the regulator looking at how to approve products and services in a traditional way.
Now, Jasmine, the big digital disruptor is 5G, of course, but how does the telco actually monetize this? Because the capex cost for implementation is just incredibly high currently, isn't it?
Yes, I think 5G capex cost would easily be 4 to 5 times of what you put into 4G. There is still a big question mark of how do you monetize this and who pays for the different technology. But it is a very crucial part in crossing the industry divide. So with Internet of Things and big data and the 5G way of doing massive connectivity and reduction in latency, a lot of things now will be connected without the mobile phone. So when we think of 5G, we do not think of the mobile phone. We think of intelligence in every single thing around us. So do we pay for it? Does the consumer pay for it, or does the other industries pay for it? So it is still a big question mark, but the potential is there. So it needs a lot of government push, I feel. The successful countries that have deployed 5G are people like China, which is forced down by the government, and the government takes quite a lot of investment upfront, for example, in terms of the spectrum cost is less and so on. But I think Malaysia, we still need to figure out this space together with the government, the regulators, as well as the manufacturers. We also feel that 5G is the next digital explosion. So we have the dot-com explosion. 5G will create a totally new type of entrepreneurs that creates platforms that connect things. So let's say I'm a new entrepreneur, I want to start something. 5G is a good place to play, for example, in agriculture. If you can build a platform that looks at the different cycles of weather, water and fertilizing of plants and the different increase the harvesting cycle, that will be great. So it's creating this new kind of entrepreneurs from Malaysia. So I was just talking about Malaysia being a very good place to start anything new. And to and Malaysia, because it's multicultural and multilingual and English is widely spoken, it's very easy to start anything in Malaysia and bring it regionally. So we have seen that a lot with a lot of these new digital companies and dot-com companies.
Thank you for your time. That was Jasmine Lee, Chief Marketing Officer of U-Mobile, talking about how telco companies are
transitioning.
Yeah, because there are a lot of challenges at this moment, right? I mean, how do you remain relevant to consumer and enterprise customers? I mean, that's the main driver, right? So the question is, can telco companies quickly kind of change the business model? And also, like you say, all these barriers of industry are breaking down. But in the meantime, this morning, we are running a poll asking whether Malaysia's GDP contracted by 17% year-on-year last quarter. Do you think the worst is behind us? And, that 17%, the headline number was quite a scary one. It was quite a shocking one. But how do you think 3Q and 4Q, is that going to be even worse? That's the question.
Well, there's two things, right? How you feel and what the real economy is. On Q2, there was actually nothing, no economic activity at all, no mobility, no moving. So 17% is the statistical trough, I think.
Well, we'll see. But up next, we'll be discussing the outlook on oil markets with Yong Liang Po, consultant for the Institute of Energy Economics and Financial Analysis. That's going to be happening after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. Now, stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.